Welcome to PHCP Pros Behind the Wall podcast. I'm Ellen Rohr, plumber's wife, industry icon, and COO of Zoom Dream Franchising Company. With this podcast, our intention is to have real, thought-provoking conversations with people from across the PHCP industry. Of course, we want to entertain and encourage. Mostly, we want to connect and allow our guests to be vulnerable, to explore insights gained and lessons learned. Let's go behind the wall.
And one of my favorite people on the planet is with us today, Mary Jean Anderson. Mary Jean, how are you?
I'm good. That's such a nice intro for me. Thank you very much. Because it's likewise, Ellen. You know, when I came into industry, there were very few women to look up to. And you were there giving me inspiration. So here we are many years later, each other's favorites, I guess you'd say.
We love each other. And I'm so happy to be here today. And you've accomplished so much. And I think your story is definitely worth digging into. And I want to just get to know you a little bit better today.
Sure.
And for the sake of our listeners, so often, you know, throughout my life, I've looked at other people who've achieved levels of success that I've really thought, wow, what makes them tick? How did they, you know, how'd they have the courage to do, I was going to use another word there. How are they going to have the courage to do the things that they did? And, you know, what's their backstory? So that's what caused me to start this podcast in general. And you're really exactly who I was looking to talk to when I put this thing together. So I'm so glad we finally made this happen. You have been busy, but for right now, like, what is it that, how would you describe yourself? If you were to introduce yourself today, what titles do you carry? What organizations do you work with? Let me know a little bit about, you know, the roles you play today.
You know, I think I would call myself the chief cheerleader. I love what I do. I love the people I work with. And I spend a lot of time applauding people for and telling them how I really feel. And a good portion of my day does that. We now have 230 or so employees. And it's hard when you get that size to really let people know you care about them. And I really do care about them. And I'm so proud of them. So I spend a lot of the day, you know, looking at somebody's numbers or at something cool that they did, especially something cool that they did, and sending them a note, that kind of thing. I sit in on the meetings to make sure that we're on track with our KPIs. And the rest of the time, I do some charity work now that I really love.
What's a charity that's near and dear to your heart?
Well, Susan G. Komen, for one, because I was named after my grandmother, Mary, and my Aunt Jean. My grandmother didn't survive breast cancer, but my Aunt Jean did, right? So Susan G. Komen is one that I associate with. I also work with the Crisis House. I'm huge, and I know you already know this, Ellen, but I'm huge about bringing women into this industry and into tech roles and in roles where they can make equal pay for an equal job. And so I work with the Crisis House where battered women shelters, and that's where I find some of my people, you know, because when you can get a woman and teach them that they can take care of themselves no matter what, and they don't have to rely on anybody, you can change a woman's life dramatically. And through Crisis House, I'm able to do that with women that could never support three kids on their own, and they've been stuck in abusive relationships where there's no way out, but the trades is the way out for them. So that's my story.
Oh, and you've done so much. We're going to get there, but I know even now at Anderson Plumbing, you employ more women techs than anybody I know.
Yes.
You've really tapped into that market, and I am so impressed and inspired. You know, it's the drum I beat now at Zoom all the time. Where are our women? What are we doing? Are we being nice to them? How are we finding them? Let's get them in here, because I think we're definitely underrepresenting women in our organization. And I point to you all the time at Anderson Plumbing. They have a lot of women over there.
Yeah. And I think it's such great pay for a woman. You know, if you think about it this way, we're getting slightly off topic, but if you think about it this way, what happened in World War II? History always predicts our future, right? In World War II, women put on their pants and went into the factories and went to work when the men went to war. Now our industry is truly in crisis, right? I mean, PHCC stat I heard a couple of years ago, national, was that we were aging out at 10% per year with 6% coming into the trades, meaning all trades. If that's a true fact, we're in serious trouble here if we don't get people into the trades. And, you know, what I found was my daughter was my first woman out in the field and she killed it. And then I realized, oh, I've got to do this. And so it's not an easy task. It takes time. But once you start getting women in and the word gets out, I just talked to one of our gals that was a hairdresser before she came to work with us. And she said, you know, I was in this horrible abusive situation. I was working as long as I could with three kids. I couldn't leave my husband. There was no way I could leave him. But now, and she has her first apartment on her own. It's just the most wonderful story. And she's so happy that she can take care of herself. And once a woman knows they can take care of themselves and they don't have to depend on anybody, then the people they bring into their life are by choice, right? And that's just the way I feel about it. So I've used this industry as a platform for me to, first of all, help people become the best they could be because I get a lot of joy out of it. But now what I call my third act is really bringing women into the industry and giving them a life career that they can do and take care of their families no matter what.
And just the impact, there. The impact that has on their kids, you know, when those kids see their mom stepping into their power, I mean, now the it's like throwing that pebble into the pond and all the ripples that come ripples. From that.
Totally agree.
Let's go backwards a little bit. So go back and describe to me, because I, you know, right before we got on, I said, I didn't think at 8 years old that I was going to be a drain cleaning, you know, goddess. So go back in time, maybe to your first job, a teacher who saw something in you, a mentor that you had early on in your life. Tell us about a few of the people who've really shaped your philosophy in the course of your life.
Well, it starts actually kind of sad because my brothers and sisters got really good grades and I really struggled with grades. So finally they had my IQ tested and I found out I had high IQ, but I still really struggled in school. And so really it came from a place of low self-esteem because I felt like why could they get good grades? Supposedly I'm smart, maybe I'm lazy. So I learned really hard to work harder than other people and I learned to ask for help. As it turns out, when my daughter was in ninth grade, she was diagnosed with a form of dyslexia and attention deficit. And it was like, oh my God, that was me. No one knew back in those days. I wasn't diagnosed. So my negative from that childhood, I had to learn to work harder than everybody else. And I had to be not afraid to ask for help and ask questions and ask advice of people. And I think that that's one of the things in our industry where I see people. Mainly it's a male dominated industry and, you know, men don't even want to ask for directions when they're driving down the street. Right.
They
for GPS. I drive around in circles for an hour because my husband wouldn't ask for directions.
Oh, how about you? We would just go home instead of the party.
To the party. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. So then we're just at home steaming at each other. Yes. But So now.
That's how I got there. And then I've always been, you know, when they test you in high school on what you should do. I've always been a helper. I'm a natural. I wanted to be a social worker and my parents didn't want me to. I was already taking home every stray animal and they thought emotionally it would be really hard. So I went into nursing. That was my education. I started in nursing, married my love of my life. We got married. He started this, you know, plumbing company. He was struggling because he was a new construction guy and he loved new construction and he liked to do new construction, but he didn't have the business end of it. So, you know, I started working with him. Once I had my kids, it was like, well, then let me help you. So that's how I got involved in the business. And then as it is to work husband and wife, I think it's very difficult.
Well, let me just stop you there for a minute.
Okay.
So interesting that Lisa Carter of Carter's My Plumber, Sarah K. Spear of Radiant Plumbing, they're nurses. I think Carla Michaels is a nurse. I know so many women executives in this field who started off as nurses, and it's another wonderful avenue for us. Nurses right now are really underappreciated, super skilled. Mm-hmm. They know pumps and pipes. I mean, they would make a smooth transition to our industry, but it is interesting to me how many nurses I uncover. And I didn't know mm-hmm. that till today, that was your background.
Yeah. And even on the technical side, you know, our women will say that they women love to work. They'll tell me we love to work with our hands, but even more importantly, we love to solve problems. We are nurturers. We go into the home. My top producers throughout my company are women. I have to tell you that. But it's that same idea of if you think about in Spanish, the La Casa is the house, right? It's female. It's female owned. It's female. And so when like my daughter would say, when she went in, it was a man and they knew that she knew what she was talking about. The guard was down, completely down. She used to sell repipes, pipelining, that kind of thing. And when it was a woman, they bonded in the house, you know? And so it's, I keep getting back to women, but anyway, that's my story. And the nursing, I think is, people always ask me, well, why do you like doing this? And I said, because there's more than anything I love to see people succeed. I have a gal that was homeless that is the longest. We didn't have our school. We trained her from scratch. She's been with us 12 years now. She's on her second home and she has three kids. And she was living in a car. And that to me, it's like, if I've served a purpose.
Yeah.
Just with Katie, I've served a purpose in life. I've helped someone become, you know, the best that she can be and continues to become better and better. And we've made money, don't get me wrong, but when you're dead and gone, you don't take your money with you. Let's all face it and be honest about it. It's a difference you make, you know, while you're alive. And this has been
back here too, because then, you know, one is just nursing, that caring, that understanding, the math, the troubleshooting, all that's involved in being a nurse is so applicable to this industry. Mm-hmm. Also, you got into it by marriage. So did I. So yeah. You married your high school sweetheart?
No, we met after school.
We met after school.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you got married. And when did you decide to go into the business? And tell me about the early days.
The early days, I was still working in medicine and he started the business as a new construction company doing what he liked to do, which was to build custom homes. And so he started custom homes, then got into shopping center, like grocery stores and some apartment buildings and things like that. And we were so broke. We could never make ends meet. We were just broke,
my face. Like you can't see my face, but I'm making all the faces because we did the same thing. Yeah. You know, here's a quick story. I've told this story many times before, but my husband had a partner who kind of worked himself into a health crisis and died. They're both 33 years old and, you know, there he is, there I am. And I go, well, let me quit my job. I'll come work for you. And I remember the first time I worked together with him to put a bid together, we were meticulous. We went through the plans. We added up all the hours. We put this bid together. And the general contractor told us we were nuts. We had to have done something wrong. Our bid was like five times what everybody else's was. And I remember saying, we must be idiots. And I dropped my price. And I set in motion the next 5 years of utter heartache. Like we were on the right track, but I didn't know it, right? Because I hadn't been educated and it just breaks my heart. But I'm feeling what you're saying. New construction, shopping centers, ugh.
Horrible, horrible. And when you think about it, they hold your 10% retention through the end of the job and as long as they can. And there is not 10% profit in any of those jobs, right? And so that actually was kind of, to be honest, the end of our marriage at one point, because I really wanted to get in service repair. It made so much sense to me to get paid today, pay your guys on Friday, pay your bills at the end of the month versus waiting 2 months to pay your bills and having all this debt accumulating. And it was super common sense. But my husband really didn't like service repair to do it. And so he didn't want to, you know, and that was kind of the beginning of the end for our relationship. We started service repair. We were doing really well. And he got back into new construction and lost a lot of money really quickly. And it, at that point, there was already, you know, it's hard for husband and wife to work together. Anyway. So there were already struggles. I'm being really honest. You told me to be honest. I'm being gut level honest. And so, but that was the final straw that broke the camel's back, was when we were back in debt. And it was like, why did you go here again? We know there's no money here. If there's a magic bullet on it, we don't have it. So I took a company that was in debt and focused strictly on service, getting paid today. And well, there's a lot more in between, but you know what I mean?
Yes. And I want to get into a few more of those details, but you know, this is where, you know, over the years, you do have some scars, your health, your relationships. A lot of the times business ends up being a detriment to those, not, you know, I don't have answers here, but it sounds like you've made some sacrifices.
Yep. And I've had the health. I've been you know, it's so interesting talking to a woman because you get that. I've had the health. I've had all of it. But good, life is good today. It's been great. It's been a great ride. I don't think Aunt Ellen, I'd change a thing, because every life's lesson has been amazing.
Yeah, the worst things become the best things, or just the moment that changes you. So where did you, like, you had this idea, the service and repair, like for me, it was Frank Blau. Frank was the one who, do you have a similar story?
Well, yeah, Frank Blau, the little black book that you priced. Remember that little black book?
Yeah,
there was that. And then it was when I came in to help my husband, because he was, it was just failure wasn't an option in my family. And I think coming back from my history of having to work harder than everybody else, I just didn't want to fail. And so it became really reaching out to people. I found Nexstar when I was at my darkest hour, and Nexstar jumped in and told me what to do. And I did anything they told me to do. But I went to my darkest hour during the Great Recession. Right before it started, I decided I was running a successful plumbing company with profit. And so what do? You add another trade that I knew nothing about. And so I added heating and air. And I found myself by mid-2009, I was $1 million in debt. And when you're $1 million in debt back then, that was a lot of money. And then that's when the sickness came. You know, the true physical illness from the stress, your body just breaks down, but I wouldn't give up. And, you know, I still give a lot of credit to, and there's many groups out there just like Nexstar. For me, I happened to find Nexstar, but I joined on a credit card, and someone that spoke at the first meeting I went to and said I was 900 and something, $57,000 in debt. I never hit $1 million. I joined Nexstar and changed my life. And I said to myself, okay, I'm going to run my credit card and hope it goes through. And so I was so desperate. There was no ego at all. It was, I got to do what they tell me to do. I'm going to do everything they tell me to do. And I did that. And I was out of debt in 2 years. And now we're going to do $51 million this year with 226 or eight employees. Can you believe it?
Oh, yes, I can.
I was I was either 4.6 million or two. So 4.6 million or 6.2 million, something like that, when I joined Nexstar with $1 million in debt. Look at that ratio. And it was hard work. Don't get me wrong. It was super hard work. But I'm up for hard work. I've always been up for hard work.
Well, and let's go back to the family dynamics too, because your journey is very interesting, because there is that who's going to be in charge thing.
Yes.
And the man-woman thing can play in there. How did you and your family navigate growing your company and the leadership that was required to make it so?
That's a really good question, because we don't have a general manager. We work off of what Zappos did. We find what we're best at, and we put the right person on the right seat of the bus. My husband, my second husband, we met here at work. He is a teacher, so he runs the school, and he's on his own. My son is vice president of strategic operations. He's very strategic. I come up with an idea and I'm the one that shoots from the hip, but he has strategy and he's really good with all the details and, you know, calculates out the spends and you know, all of that. He's working on the building, our next building, because we're moving soon. And, you know, he's just so good that way. My daughter runs all the service departments and manages them, and she's our trainer. So it works out that we don't work for each other. Nobody works for each other. We don't have a general manager. We meet once a week for 1 hour, limited to 1 hour every Thursday afternoon. And we go through what they've done and what I've done. And that's it. I just give them full trust. And it's, they're running their own business at what they're best at within the company. And that's the Zappo model. And for that, it stopped all of it, because it was difficult, because Kyle would want his way on something and I'd want my way. And then we finally decided, I read this thing and how Zappos got to be this. And it's like, wait a minute, all we have to do is divide the company in sections and let everybody do their own thing.
And I thought at some point you got an outside general manager. Did you go through a phase where you did that? Or is that just how I misunderstood?
No, we had a general manager and he was retiring. And we started looking at people and I started feeling like it was a cog in the wheel. Everything had to run through the general manager and slow it down. And it was a way for our family to not argue over anything, because it went through the general manager. So I didn't have to tell Kyle, no, you can't do it that way. I didn't have to tell Kelly, the general manager, it would be their decision. But what happened is we just took the company up, divided it out and what everybody's best at. And we don't interfere with each other's stuff. We talk a lot. We give advice. And we have like a little sheet that we call it's something I picked up from Nexstar, but it lists like what you can do on your own. what you should run by somebody else, you know, like certain banking things. You can't do anything with the bank. And just so we have our what we can do and what our guidelines are, and we run the company. We've done this successfully for over 2 years now. And our company's had, I think this year's growth, we were 35 million last year. And we're going to do 51 million this year. And that's because we don't have a cog. I know we don't have a cog in the wheel though.
Okay. So you had a general manager. He's retiring and you just went, let's not replace him.
Yep.
Let's say he did what he needed to do for you, which was to keep you guys from fussing at each other.
Yes. Yes. And he was good. He was good. But you know, the way I've run the company, but I didn't get it on the family structure until later on. But the way I've always run the company is find what people are good at and let's get them on the right seat on the bus. Don't put a drain tech in a, you know, or let's say don't, like we have a plumbing install department. Don't let it put the pressure on a great plumber to go out and sell when he can't sell. Don't do that to him. Let him do what he's good at. And so we've always done that in the way we set up the business, but we never thought about it until I read this article about Zappo. And I was like, we don't need a general manager. You know, we just sat down, divided it up 2 years ago and our company's taken off. There's no cog in the wheel anymore. And everybody, I know, crazy, huh?
Love it.
Yeah.
Love, love, love it. And where did that growth come from? Did you acquire companies? Are you marketing? I know you're a marketing. I want to use the word, you're obsessed with marketing.
I love marketing. I do.
You and love it.
I love marketing. That's my favorite part of my job. That's what I do. I think that it comes from marketing. I think it comes from also, if I could give listeners advice, I think we spend so much time chasing new clients when we should be giving our clients the very best service and continuing to court them. And we do millions of dollars of business through VIP, you know, maintenance agreements, mm-hmm. millions of dollars. I think like 10 or 11 million a year on just those. And I think that we're always running for that new customer. We seem to forget the ones that we've already done a good job and appreciate us. And so I think a lot of our growth has come from that. And I think, you know, Kyle has a lot of freedom to organize the vehicles and purchase when he needs to. And, you know, he's really good at planning strategically there. The other thing that really helped us is we started a school in 2017, Anderson Career Builders Institute, and that has brought us 100. We've graduated 100 students and we have 90 of them working here. So those are all the things that helped growth. But when Brian could run the school by himself and he didn't have to go to a general manager and get things approved, he could just do it. I mean, these are all smart people. You know, and I think we tend to, this is the way it's always gone. There's always a general manager, you know, and we think that way, but you don't need one really. If you've got somebody that's really good at ops, let them do ops and just tell you what they're doing. So it just, for us, it worked. I don't know. And now
I love this.
I think we have argued as a family in 2 years over anything.
Oh, this is so good. Okay. So, some of the salient moments in your life, one is just even having a learning self-diagnosed, but I'll take it because I feel the same way. Mm-hmm. I feel like I, you know, would have been described as dyslexic, but it just wasn't the language we used when we were kids, you mm-hmm. know? So I completely relate to that. And then having to overcome it and figure out coping skills for that did mm-hmm. require you to be the hardest working girl in school and in show business and in your industry. And then Nexstar, a group, a community, smart people who lined up with you, Zappos, just another inspirational company mm-hmm. from outside our industry. Let me ask you about your financial awareness. You mm-hmm. know, for me, that's what Frank provided. I did not want to sit down and look at columns and numbers. I fought it. Once I learned it, it was like being born again. I'm like, hey, kids, this isn't that hard. Like, mm-hmm. you know, this is really awesome. But mm-hmm. what was your journey like? How did you become savvy enough as a financial manager to pull this off?
Well, I decided to go back to college at night and take some classes, which that didn't last very long at all. And so I really just started taking whatever classes were available within the industry. And that PHCC had some, remember
QSC?
QSC had some, you know, I just started learning. I'm not a numbers person, but I knew that numbers didn't lie. And I learned that numbers had to drive a business and I had to focus on numbers. I would have preferred to only focus on people, but I had to focus on numbers. So I had to learn how to read a financial statement and understand it in a balance sheet. And it was just working through one step at a time. Like my original thought was go to college at night, take finance and everything. And that was a disaster. So, you know, it's, but I don't like numbers, but they're the most important part of running your business. We all know that. And the KPIs are like the most important part.
And that's what you use really a dashboard. So like, how do you keep an eye on things at this Thursday meeting? Are the KPIs there? Like, how do y'all keep in communication about those main numbers?
Well, when we set up our budget in October, everybody agrees to what they're going to deliver. And they know we have what we call a keep the lights on budget that, you know, each manager is in charge of. And these are numbers you're going to hit no matter what. And then we set bonuses up for them as they get to next area. But keep the lights on budget means not having a job. Like if that's, we're that serious about it. And so we have numbers that they have to hit. And we have morning huddles every morning religiously right at 9 o'clock. It's 10 minutes. You know, because of COVID, we started doing it through Zoom, which is a lot more effective. And we go through our KPIs and we make a commitment to the day. We know where they're broken down to the every day of the week. And we make our commitments. And when somebody's hurting, somebody else will jump in and help and say, let me take two of your installers and I'll get that job done because we have to hit our numbers. So our call center has numbers they know they have to bring in. They know they have to book so many drain calls. They know they have to book so many plumbing service calls, so many, you know, HVAC. They know what they have to book every day. And then the next day we find out if they hit their commitment. And we call it if you're off for three days, then we're all going to jump in and help you because it becomes a habit. And that's just our, but it's broken down to every single day.
Who's on those calls? Who are the people that get invited?
So we have our VIP manager who is in charge of selling, you know, ensuring that we hit our VIP sales numbers. We have two plumbing service managers, an HVAC service manager, our call center manager, Kelly, my daughter, who is head of all of that, and our inside sales manager. And so all of them have their KPIs that they focus on. And we even do turnovers, like our HVAC service department. Like this morning she had three people. Our school is doing an EPA test today. So she had three people out and she said, I'm still going to get 9 turnovers, meaning you're going to get 9 systems that we're going to go out and look at today that need to be replaced. And I said, ooh, you're a tough chick today. And she's like, I'm going to do it. Somehow I'll get 9 turnovers. She knew she was short staffed, but she wanted to keep her commitment because she didn't want to fall behind as we're getting close to month end. Because their bonuses all, by the way, they have great bonuses revolved around those commitments.
Oh, man, I am so inspired by your story. Okay, now, what's happening now and where are you going next in the organization? Because a lot's been happening at Anderson Plumbing.
Yes. So we sold the majority stock of our company as a corporate buyout. You know, we're still owners. My kids are now owners. My husband and I are. We're minority owners. We are still here. We love what we do. So we looked very carefully and found 2 companies out there that let you run business as usual. Basically, they buy you out and you give them a budget and you run your business as usual, but they're there if you need them. So that's the business model we decided to go with. And so actually it's business as usual with some really great stuff. For instance, we now have 15 recruiters at our fingertips.
15 recruiters?
Recruiters. They have 15 full-time recruiters, so they can help us with things like that. Got amazing medical insurance that I could never afford because it's such a large group. They're billions of dollars. So there's that part of it. And then I'll be gone in 2 years, 100%. I'm working on a 2-year out, but I'm calling it my third act right now. I've been talking to PHCC about training. And I think we have to get not just women, but we have to get people trained in the industry. And right now, the way PHCC in California and San Diego are doing it is you hire the people, the employer does, and then bring them into the class. And what I want PHCC to do to get is let's get the people, let's get the grants. I know how to get the money. I've done it already for my own school. And let's train the people and then sell them to the employers. and have them do like 2 or 3 days of in-class, you know, lab and what we're doing with our school. And then the rest of the day going out to companies, and we can loan them to companies like, here, you know, this guy's assigned to your company. These 2 are assigned to your company as apprentices. So they're doing on the job training 2 or 3 days a week, and then in class 2 or 3 full days a week.
Well, you're not retiring anytime soon. I can
see
that. No,
I'm not retiring. I really want to help. Our industry needs this. And we, I don't care where you go in our country, and you, the number one problem our industry is finding tradesmen. And we have to find tradesmen and tradeswomen, and we have to train them and train them right, because the watered down training in the state of California is pathetic. Some stuff we see, they work under my license, so they don't have to be licensed. So the watered down training from person to person with no real, you know, proper training on residential, because it's very different than new construction, you know, and that's what the union trade schools teach. And this is a whole different industry that needs a whole different way of training people on communication skills, on repairs, on, you know, how to work in a home. So that's what I call my third act is, as I won't, I'll retire from the day-to-day operation of the company, but I'm really focused on, I want to help people learn to get people trained properly, you know, and I think PHCC is going to be a huge platform for that. If I could get, you know, and that's what I'm, I've been talking to people in Sacramento and San Diego, and how can we do this? How can we get people? And that, instead of like, you know, doing your fundraisers to like for Christmas parties and golf events, why don't our fundraisers really be teaching people this amazing trade that can give them 6-figure income and spreading them out through the industry? So I don't know how far I'll get, but that's my goal.
Ah, I think you'll get what you want, girl. I see you doing it. So what was the thought process to sell the company? I'm sure that this must have been pretty emotional for you and your family.
Yes. Size, primarily, we're pretty big, and knowing we'll hit 51 million, and you have to keep growing. And I, quite frankly, to be honest, felt like I have met my match education-wise. I'm about as far as I can take it. And my kids, I worked really hard a lot, you know, a lot of years, and my kids know that to keep this size company going, they're going to have to even work harder than I did. And so we just talked, and I said, if I give you your fair share, what do you guys think? And they said, well, we want to stay doing what we're doing. And so that's when we focused on a company that would pay us, and the money's stupid. Like, it's stupid money. Like, it's ridiculous. It's generational wealth. Like, it's incredible. We had to do it. So you know, they both feel, and actually have already been offered moving up with Intern Point. My daughter, they want her to be a trainer for all the companies, and they want my son to do this 5-year deal where he, and this is like right up his alley, where he gets they have 4,000 trucks, gets it all electric on electric instead of gas meters. But that would be his thing, is to sit down like and nerd out, you know? So we don't know. But they like what they're doing. So we don't know if they're going. Kelly didn't take the training job because she's got young kids, and she said, no, I'm going to stay here and run the company. So she's really, you know, running her operations. And I don't know. I don't know what their futures bring, but we all really don't want Anderson to falter. It's our family business. So we all really want to stay engaged.
I heard this, I've used this about 100 times since I heard it. I was listening to a podcast, and they were talking about the U.S. women's soccer team, and their mantra is small ego, big mission. And what can happen, and I so appreciate what you were saying. You know, I've reached the limit of where I think my firepower took us this far, and how do we go? Like, that takes a small ego and a focus on a bigger mission to not make that like a big sticking point or an issue. Like, it's just good for you for seeing that there are, you know, other pieces now that we've reached this level that we're going to need to find people who are smarter and different from us in different ways, because the game is just different than it was. The skill set that you have now may not take you to 100 million or 200 million, but let's see if we can get there and create that legacy wealth for not just you and your family, but so many other people now that you've magnetized to the Anderson Plumbing family.
You're hitting the nail exactly on the head. I mean, it's exactly it. Is how far can the brand go? We don't know. We'd love to see it go. They're super excited about, they love our brand and taking it further. And that's great. But for us to get that liability off our back and to know that financially everyone's secure. My grandkids are secure for college. Everything's perfectly fine. And we don't have that big stressor anymore. It's just been great. And we can do business as usual. And truly is business as usual.
And even that, like, I can imagine the, you know, you don't make great decisions when you're stressed and tight and your vision, you know, folds, everything gets harder. Like you, from that point, you're not going to be doing your best work. So mm-hmm. if you can take the pressure off and have, you know, the risk of running a big company, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, beyond the podcast, that just at some point, the folks I've talked to who have gotten investors do so in no small part to get a little bit of relief from the overwhelming responsibility and risk of right. running these companies, running these trucks and all the dangerous work that we yes. do. Yeah, I can see that by lightening that, you may even be capable of doing even greater work.
And I think that's exactly what's happening. And I do, everything that you said is just right on. And I think that that's what I see in my kids. They seem a lot happier, not just because they have money now, but because they just feel like the pressure is off them too. Mm-hmm. And Kyle, you know, he's tasked with a big ordeal. We're in a 25,000 square foot building. We've grown out of it and we did it in 5 years. And it's like, so where do you go next? Like, how do you figure, you know, he's running all these numbers on square footage and cubicles and this and that and growth and trying to figure out like, what size should we really, and where should we be? And he has someone to go to and he can put his stuff together and he can call them and they'll fly out and they're going to walk several buildings, but that takes that pressure off him having to decide because he can interview everything, but he doesn't have to do it. He doesn't have to,
right.
he
just
doesn't
has have some
to sign the contract. People. Yeah. He doesn't yeah. have to sign the contract and make a mistake, I guess. You know, or something. So it's a lot less pressure. It really is.
Well, you know, for the sake of time, I'm gonna start moving us to a conclusion. I could talk to you all day. I just love you so much, and I am so appreciative of you in my life. Thank you. Thanks for sharing with me today. Let's just wrap up with maybe a couple of tips. What is a tool, a system, a book? You mentioned Zappos. What is another practical tool that you engaged that really changed things for you? Was it a software? Was it what's a practical tip? You know, one of the things that helped us go from here to here was?
Well, there's been several fun things along the way. One of them is I made everybody read a book called Who Moved the Cheese?
Yeah,
a while back, when my husband was out. And we sat down and wrote our mission statement. I had them read that first. I think Mark Nordstrom wrote a book, The Nordstrom Theory, I believe it's called. It's not one of you know, the big ones, but it really gave me the idea of the way I wanted to see our company, the direction I wanted to see our company go. You know, there's all the big guys out there. I still go all the way back to Dale Carnegie. He's still my hero. I think he set the way that everyone is an offshoot of Dale Carnegie's original setup. But I think,
let me ask this, because you just brought it up. What is the company mission statement?
Oh, well, it's in every, I wish you could see it. It's on every single office here. And it's about five paragraphs. I can send you a copy of it if you'd like to see it. But it's literally our decor. In every office you go into, there is our mission statement. And it's a well-designed poster, and we read it as the Pledge of Allegiance, and it's very thorough and in-depth, and it talks about, you know, what our responsibilities are to society, to cleanliness, to customer service, and, you know, and we live by that, and that's who we are. It's our, you know, number one thing is our mission statement.
As you recall it without reading it, what word or two really resonate with you? If you were to boil that mission statement down to a word or two, what words come up for you?
The client is always right, even when they're wrong, probably is one of the big ones. We have steps of what's important to us. And first it's people, you know, safety. It goes through the different steps of what the most important. But in general, it talks about being ethical and honest. And yeah, and it's just, we wrote it together. And it means the world to all of us, and we live by it. It's just, like I said, in every single office. I don't care where you go,
I just building, you'll love, see a mission love, statement. Love this conversation.
Yeah.
It's been so great. So last question from Proust Questionnaire. What does happiness mean to you? What does happiness mean to you?
You know, excellent question, because it's not money. You know, I said earlier, you can make all the money in the world, but in reality, you don't bring it with you. And my husband and I were just having this question, you know, this conversation, because now we do have all this money, right? And it's sitting in the bank and it's like, oh, you just go back to work, you know, same day. I think what happiness to me truly is to watch people become the best they can be and know you've had some hand in it. To me, that's true happiness. It really is. I just dig it. I just, one of our couples here, my husband raised him up from a puppy. And our HR manager just brought in their engagement pictures today. And he's a senior tech moving into management now. And she's our HR manager. And I just, that to me is just what it's all about. That's what it's all about. There can't be much more than that. And that's happiness.
Ah, Mary Jean, thank you for letting us go behind the wall and learn more about you. You're an amazing leader and a wonderful person, and you're having a very powerful, positive impact on this world. Thank you for that.
And I want to say before we go that thank you too, Ellen, because if you weren't there and I could watching what you were doing, I may not have done it either. But I knew you were such a strong woman and you were out there making a difference, and I followed you, and you were the one person that was out there leading the charge. And I kept thinking, it can be done. I'm watching somebody do it. So thank you for me.
You're making my day,
sister.
It's nice
to love each other, right?
I do. I love, love, love you. And I take the love right back. Thank you for that. What a great podcast. And so with that, thank you for listening. And until next episode, this has been Ellen and Mary Jean, and we've gone behind the wall. Thanks, PHCP Pros. Thank you.